Network, proudly presents The Jay Slade Show, with your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as a special guest. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
Thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us into the show in style. He's absolutely right. I am Jay Clemmer, and you are listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Plays is brought to you by JB's Best Hot Sauce. It is absolutely the hottest, the tastiest, the freshest hot sauce you've ever had. It's on every table in the Deep South, and it's headed your way. Come get some JB's Best yourself. When it says JB's, it's the best. All right, everybody, welcome to this early fall, late summer edition of the Jay's Plays Show. We've passed the major championships portion of the season, PGA Championships in the books, with a newly minted champion in Jimmy Walker. And we've just finished up the Olympics as well. The men are in the books, the ladies are playing this weekend. And we're going to be headed towards the Ryder Cup and the FedEx Cup. And to that end, we're bringing in the publisher, the editor-in-chief, and the chief grand poobah muckety muck of the Golf News Network, Ryan Ballengee, is here with us. Ryan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Jay.
Always great to have you on. Let's get right to it. Give us your impression of Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson and Matt Kuchar's performance in the Olympics.
I thought it was wonderful. I don't think the golf could have asked for a whole lot better in terms of its Olympic reemergence. To have a match play situation with nine holes to go, with two of the best players on the planet, both major champions, both guys happy to be there, very active in being a part of the Olympic spirit and with golf. I thought that was great. And then have Kuchar rise up and shoot 63 and snatch the bronze medal by what was a four, I think, altogether. I love that. And to see his reaction afterward that he was so happy to have won the bronze and that he was really intrigued by the medal and what it meant and all of those things. I really don't think they could have gotten a better outcome given what they had going into it.
It was a long and bumpy run up both to the Olympics and for the Olympic golf course designed by Gil Hanse. And, you know, it did look really good on television. And it does seem like it would be an excellent match play golf course with the number of short par fours, the number of severe greens. And that was one of the things that I kind of wish the Olympics had done a little differently. And then, yes, we sort of had a match play type of feel to the last nine holes, but it was still a 72-hole tournament, stroke play, aggregate play, individual play. There was no team element to it. You know, I sort of wonder if it might have been more interesting if the Olympics had chosen their own format rather than given us same old, same old. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the IOC basically left it up to the International Golf Federation, which is more or less all of golf's governing bodies recognized together in one fake organization. And I think that the deferment here was, okay, if we have basically the same tournament we have every week, it won't be so weird that guys won't come and play. And they were wrong. That didn't work out. So the format, I don't think, was the issue. I mean, I'm sure that was part of it. But I think moving forward, there was talk down in Rio during the men's competition from Peter Dawson that they will look into a format change. I don't think that we will see a radical format change where now it's like a 32-man and 32-woman match play tournament. But I also think that we're not going to go to Tokyo without some kind of team component. So maybe it'll be more like the World Cup of Golf, where you have an individual tournament going on at the same time that you have a team component, be it combined score, which is kind of meh, or you could do a unique, better ball format where the teams don't play together. So you have the individual tournament unfold as a 72-hole stroke play. It's easy to understand. There's no confusion. I'm fine with that. And then you have this kind of leaderboard that basically changes every time one of the partners scores and scores better. And I think that would be pretty interesting. So that would be my proposal.
Yeah, Dan Jenkins said something similar. You know, you take the top two scores from each player from each country and add them together. That might be one way of doing it. Another thought was to be able to work out something in the form of match play. You know, maybe have two players per team or three players per team playing against other teams. You know, just something a little different than what we always have every single week. It really didn't give it that much of a special occasion type of feel to it. You know, and then, of course, all of the rigmarole that led up to the Olympics with the building of the golf course, with the Zika virus threats, you know, scaring off a lot of the players, you know, and Rio just being so unsafe that there were some salient reasons for people not to come. And a few of the incidents that have happened over the course of these games have sort of made that play out. There was a media bus sprayed with, some people say stone, some people say bullets. Another media tent at an equestrian event was pierced with a five-caliber bullet, a very big, long, thick, serious weaponry kind of thing. And, you know, we've got all of these stories about people being robbed, people being mugged, people getting into trouble out on the beaches and out in Rio. Hopefully things will go a lot more smoothly in Tokyo.
I think that they will. I mean, these guys will not have the socioeconomic and criminal excuses, much less the health one, probably, in 2020. So they were able to use Zika as kind of this catch-all that you couldn't dispute for any variety of reasons that they didn't want to come play, whether it was they didn't want to play for nothing, whether they didn't want to play an extra tournament, whether they didn't want to fly that far, whether they actually had legitimate concerns about Brazil's economy, presidency, whether its crime force was, you know, its crime fighting force would be able to keep them safe, or Zika, and all those things. They're not going to have that excuse for Tokyo. So,
well,
I think that's... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
There is one worry that people are still looking into, and that is the Fukushima disaster poisoning a lot of the waters with, you know, nuclear waste. There's a, I can't remember her name, but a rather important scientist who said that if the fourth and final rods go into the ocean, that she's going to be getting all of her family out of Boston. That's how bad she says the situation is. And, you know, she says she won't eat any fish on the west coast of the United States for the rest of her life. So, you know, something to look at. Again, the IOC worries me a great deal because they downplayed, you know, everything that's been going on out there, and yet pretty much everything except a serious, serious, serious catastrophe has come true. We've had people get sick with dysentery. We've had people come back with Zika. We've had people get mugged. And we've even had cables snap and cameras fall on people. So I think that there has to be a painstaking reappraisal on the part of the IOC to be more fiscally responsible and more responsible to the fans and to the city that they're, you know, moving into. It is a gargantuan thing to bring somewhere, and they, you know, have to be very careful of all of these issues. So, but Tokyo is a modern city. Tokyo has a lot of the infrastructure already in place, and like you said, its socioeconomics are much stronger than those of Brazil. And they have some great golf courses there to play as well, so we don't have to go through buying and building a course and all the worries of having it go in and be ready. But that being said, the course held up well, 13 under to hold off, you know, the pros in a major-like atmosphere with the very best there. That was a pretty good showing on the part of Gil Hansen and on the part of the Rio Olympics golf course. What did you think of the golf course in particular?
I thought it was amazing. I think Gil Hansen's done a wonderful job. Him and Amy Alcott got together to produce a golf course that is playing tremendously well for the women, just as it did for the men. That doesn't always happen to be the case. And they did it together with a design that eliminates rough I mean, there's just either it's sand, native land, native stuff, water, or fairway and green. I mean, I think that encapsulates kind of the sand belt view of golf, and it's been transported right into Rio, and I think it's been universally praised. I haven't heard anyone really complain about the golf course, either the way it's played or the way it's been designed. So this was a total home run from a golf architecture perspective. You could talk about the issues in acquiring the land, issues developing the land, all of the Brazilian government looking the other way in terms of letting what seems to be an important piece of environmentally sensitive land get developed in the first place. But the end product was very good. And I hope this is the ultimate issue. After the games are over in about, I think it's October, there's now a 20-year kind of plan to have this golf course be a publicly accessible course. What I worry about is whether the maintenance will be kept up so that even in 5 years, people will still be able to play this course. And that is my concern moving forward, that Gil Hanson, Amy Alcott, and the people who did the manual labor to make this golf course may have done it in vain in the long term.
Well, one of the things that I liked that you said the most was no rough. That is a new emerging modern trend that many courses had a great deal of success with. Old Town in North Carolina, the last great golf course of Perry Maxwell, was restored by Coore and Crenshaw, and I know that Hans saw it and was impressed with what he saw there. One of the things they did there was eliminate rough and make 6 entire holes completely interconnected. You know, all one vast playing field with only bunkers and a creek bed and, of course, some woods on the perimeter, to provide the diagonal playing angles and to play to be the playing quarters for the various holes. There's even a magnificent double green. We see no roughs at Pine Valley, where the playing corridors and the fairways are exactly the same width. You know, they're 60 yards wide, maybe even 80 yards wide. You miss the fairway, you're in the woods and you're chipping out, but, you know, they give you a chance to play golf there. You're not tacking out a rough and you're not, you know, gouging wedges out greenside. And even smaller courses like Crestwood in upstate New York embraced it, and public golfers love it. They can find the ball, they can hit the ball, they can play more quickly. It really is a great modern trend in golf course architecture. It's sustainable. It's inexpensive. It's easy to maintain. There's no downside to it.
I think that is a good trend overall in golf. It gives you, as a player, more opportunity for imagination. It lets more golfers play their style. There's still penalties to be had. You just land in spots you don't want to be in that aren't rough. They're grasses. They're the native sandy areas like we're seeing. Like we got at Pinehurst number 2 as well, or actual bunkers that were cut in a really cool way that I wish Hans's team or whoever kind of did the final preparation kind of packed those walls a little bit more, but alas, that's fine. So I think that this is a good model for what golf course architecture can be for the public, and that the USGA has tried to make a move to offer to municipal golf courses and municipalities the willingness to come in and do a little architecture work to improve the way the courses play, to speed up play, to make sure people have more fun. This is the model that they should look at, I think, if that's the work that they're aiming to do in the coming years.
Now, as we turn towards the Ryder Cup, we get the opposite end of the spectrum architecturally, but a great place to go and visit. We head to Hazeltine National outside of Minneapolis, Minnesota for the Ryder Cup this year. Designed originally by Robert Trent Jones, Sr., it held the U.S. Open in 1971 by Tony Jacklin, and proved highly unpopular with the players. However, there have been some changes made to the course. It's been softened around its rough edges. Reese, the son of Bobby, or Trent, I should say, actually, has come in and done some work there. And while it still maintains its center line you know, hook bunkers at 290, fade bunkers at 270, you know, fairways and greens, sort of U.S. Open-ish type of strategy. It is ergonomic. It's big. It can fit 55,000 fans a day. It's easy to get to. It's got parking on site. And everybody there is Minnesota nice. And so the ergonomics and the wonderful cheer of the Minnesotans are going to make up for the fact that we really don't have all that great a match play course in Hazeltine National. Your thoughts on Hazeltine? You covered it in 2009 when Y.E. Yang stole the Wanamaker Trophy from Tiger Woods. What are your thoughts on Hazeltine and how it will play out for the Ryder Cup?
Well, I wasn't there in person 7 years ago for Y.E. Yang's shocker of a win, so I haven't seen it up close. So I my judgment is a little bit, it's obviously from afar. I think it's a good golf course. I mean, it's obviously a major championship pedigree, had hosted several, what, three, four, and it's done a good job in each of those major championship settings. Rich Beam was an unexpected but interesting champion in 02, and they've done well in hosting major championships. Now, as you mentioned, how does it hold up as a match play course? They flip the nines, right? And I think that's their hope, is that they'll basically let the scoring part be the back nine and see how that works out in terms of making it a better match play course. And that's given what, you know, any golf course, if you want to take the more exciting side and make it the back nine, if that's what you're trying to do for match play. So I think that they're doing the right thing in that regard. We'll just have to see how it all plays out, because, of course, the PGA of America, Davis Love III, and the American captains, they'll get together and try to figure out the best way to set up this golf course so that the Americans can, A, win matches, and B, that the fans there are going to get to see interesting, compelling golf. So hopefully they will do the setup with that in mind and try to inspire birdies and eagles.
Well, my thoughts would be to set it up like a U.S. Open as best as possible. It was a bit of a fluke what happened in 1970. It was Tony Jacklin, an Englishman, but that week there was howling winds, and he won by 7 shots over a very upset Dave Barr. Went down Dave Hill, who went down in history in Minnesota as one of the grumpiest people to ever come through the state. And then also, Payne Stewart won in a playoff in the 1991 U.S. Open in Hazeltine as well. So what I thought would be, you know, grow them up to 5 inches, tighten up fairways to supermodel slim, and, you know, let them have it under U.S. Open conditions, because it would usually favor the Americans, I would think. You know, the more drivable par fours and the more creativity and the more you give people a chance to think their way around the golf course, the more you're going to let the European players in, just my opinion. You know, take a grand wizard of genius like Dustin Johnson, okay? My favorite story that came out of PGA Championship Week was a story from Billy Horschel. Billy Horschel said that Dustin Johnson and his brother AJ stood on the tee box for about 10, 15 minutes and couldn't figure out how to add up the yards. He said, okay, you don't want to make them have to do that. Just point to the middle of the fairway, tell Dustin he's as far as he can, point to the middle of the green, tell Dustin
I get where you're coming from for an American advantage, but I don't think it will be all that interesting as a match play course on television if people aren't making birdies and eagles. That's what people want. That's what the crowds want. They want to cheer for that. So I think that you've got to be able, maybe you come up with some kind of way of blending the two. Maybe you widen the fairways a little bit, but you make the penalty for missing it enormous. Instead of a 25-yard fairway, it's 32 yards, and if you miss it, you're at 5-inch deep stuff. I think that might be a reasonable compromise. Obviously, you want to set up the pins so that they're accessible for the best assets that America has. So if everybody on the team hits a draw, then you set up the pin on the left, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I guess we'll just but setup should have a big deal to do with it, and I think that the PGA of America is going to side with excitement over excitement with birdies and eagles, and hope that the Americans deliver on that over pars and bogeys and hoping that the Americans will make more pars than bogeys.
Well, you're certainly right that the fans want to see more birdies because more birdies equals more excitement. Well, before we let you go, we got to give it a trivia question. And so, Captain here, JB's best spot is a trivia question every time we have a guest on the show. Now, obviously, since you're an employee, in fact, since you're the CEO, founder, chief McAfee Mech, whatever title you want to give you, of the entire network, you can't mute either, obviously, because people are there, except for Dave, to be in the contest in the first place. But we'll give it a trivia question anyway to find see if you get it right.
All right, let's see what we can do.
Okay. Your topic is famous quotations. Who famously said the following? Honey, I forgot to duck. Honey, I forgot to duck.
Honey, I forgot to duck.
Honey, I forgot to duck. As they were wheeling him into the hospital.
I don't know.
We were looking for Ronald Reagan.
I didn't realize we were going to do a John Hinckley question. Jeez.
But it's, you know, that's one of the great lines in American history, okay? The Gipper was a true Grady. He had grit and he had humor and he had a lot of love in him. And he really loved Nancy. And, Honey, I forgot the duck is one of the iconic lines. The other good one being, I hope all you doctors are Republicans.
Right, I was thinking about the possible way he could have handled that situation for sure.
Well, my dad did one similar, okay, when he had his heart attack and he met the doctor looked at him and said, oh, you're a kid, what kind of judge are you? And I thought it was a medical malpractice. Anyway, it was really great to have you on the show. We'll be checking in with you again as we get closer to the riot drop. Everybody check out www.newsnut.com and check out that slash radio as well for Jace Plays Radio and all the other great shows like the Info Golf Show. We will be right back after these messages and I'll be very happy to have you on the DJQ.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute. This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.